Good afternoon. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair. And before we go any farther, my friend today is Dee Fuchs, and I want to make sure that Dee is on the board. So, Dee, would you sign in and just give us your name and where you're calling me from? Dee? Well, it sounds like we may have a little bit of a technical difficulty here, and I'm going to carry on while I muck around with the panel to see if I can figure out what's going on. But in the meantime, my friend is Dee Fuchs, and Dee is a Coast Guard family, and she lived out at the lighthouse at New Dungeness. And I'm going to put the headphone down, and I'm going to try one thing here and see if I can get the... Okay, I lost Dee, and so I think she's going to try to call in again, and we'll see if we can get this thing back up. In the meantime, I'm going to go ahead with my regular broadcast. I always have a full dance card of things to talk about on the program, and so here we go. This is, as it is every Tuesday at 1 bell of the afternoon watch, this is your Captain Joe. And I am up in the captain's chair broadcasting live, unscripted and unrehearsed from the Gene Bosch studio on the magical isle of Vashon. As always, I deliver my greetings to the to all of Captain Joe's people all over the world, with from Singapore on one side of the world, even though my Singapore family is no longer living there, all the way to the Kingdom of Sweden on the other side of the world, from which I have just returned. And greetings to all of my family, all of Captain Joe's people, all of the ships and aircraft and all of the stations in between who are all about their father's business. On the binnacle list today, I wish that I was able to report a wholesale evacuation of the list and everybody returning to full duty, but unfortunately, that is not the case. And in particular, I have to report that several people who are really close to me are still on the binnacle list and still need our support as they work their way through all of the medical considerations and problems that are part of their membership on the binnacle list. A reminder that for those who may be new listeners to the captain's chair and to your Captain Joe, it's called the binnacle list because in sailing ship days, the ship surgeon would send a list all the way back aft to the steering station with those people who were not available for duty and thus not able to answer the call to sail stations. And this list was on a, here we go, maybe that is Dee right there. Let's try again. Dee, is that you? Okay, did you hear my music? All right. Well, I'm going to try again to put you on the board, so just stand by, and when I have made the necessary connection, we'll see whether you are able to talk to all of Captain Joe's people all over the world. So stand by, because I am... Huh? Yes, that's okay. So let us see whether or not by... pressing this magic button that I have just now got right here. There. All right. Now, can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Here we go. You're on the board. So, So my friend today, we through the magic of electronics and through the fumbleness of Captain Joe, we now have Dee on the board, and I am delighted to have you with me, Dee. And I'm going to start off by saying that your married surname, Fuchs, is the same surname as Sir Vivian Fuchs, who accomplished what Sir Ernest Shackleton had attempted to do. He carried out the first transit of the Antarctic continent in 1957. And he was a good friend of mine when I was living in Cambridge. And I remember that when you and I first met telephonically, that you did not know that you and Sir Vivian carried the same name. Do you remember that?
Yes, I sure do, and I was surprised to hear it.
All right. So in my introduction, while I was waiting to get you on the board, which is where you are now, and you are now talking to Captain Joe's people all over the world. So there are literally thousands, if not millions, of Captain
That's
Joe's
amazing.
Listeners and Captain Joe's people. And now you're one of Captain Joe's people, and so we're going to start off by the little introduction that I gave before I was able to get you onto the board, and that was to say that you are a Coast Guard family, and that one of the places where you were stationed was the light station out at New Dungeness. So let's start off by you telling everybody who you are, and then move to New Dungeness Spit, because it's a very interesting light station.
Okay. I was a newlywed. My name is Dolores, but everybody called me Dee. And I can remember that day so well. They brought, they had an old pickup truck that they had really high wheels on that could get over some of the debris along the spit. And that's what they came to pick us up with, our first trip to Dungeness. And it was lovely. It was a beautiful home, a three-bedroom home, a living room, dining room with the Duncan Fife dining room set, and a kitchen and bathroom. And we had a convex wall on our dining room, which was the tower. You couldn't go to the light from our home. You had to go outside and then the front step up to the light. But I thought it was absolutely lovely.
And your husband was, what was his rating?
He was brand new to the Coast Guard.
So was he a seaman?
Yes.
And how long did you live out at New Dungeness?
Little over a year, 1955, probably, I think, at the end of March in 56.
Did you have any family out there while you were there?
We did. We had a baby in January of 56, and the baby was malformed internally. We didn't know that, but we were having problems with him. And we called the station in Port Angeles, and I told them that my baby was very ill and described what was going on. And they had a helicopter there in short order and took us to Port Angeles. And it was just something that couldn't be fixed.
But I remember when you and I first talked, and you told me this story, one of the things that you told me was that you felt that the service had taken good care of you.
Oh, absolutely. It couldn't have been better. They did everything they possibly could. It just wasn't meant to be.
So one of the things that we talk a lot about from the cap... Oh, it sounds like you've got a... You've got somebody living with you there.
I do.
Yeah. One of the things that we talk about frequently is the absolute necessity of those in authority to take care of those who for whom they are privileged to command. I have felt this over and over so many times in my own life in the Coast Guard. And so for you to validate that is warms the cockles of this captain's black heart. And
yes.
And so one of the things that you were introduced to me by a Coast Guard, former Coast Guard radioman by the name of Bernie Merrifield, and you told me something about Bernie and his family that I'd like you to mention here.
Well, great. Bernie was responsible for my husband being in the Coast Guard, and so they'd been friends for years. But I'd like to tell them a happy anniversary. Today is their 64th anniversary. My husband stood up with Bernie. He was the best man.
And were not your husband and Bernie shipmates together in a ship later on? Is that true?
No, I don't think they were ever together, but they always kept track of one another. And when we were stationed after the lighthouse, we were stationed in Seattle. He was on the Coast Guard cutter Wachusett.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Bernie was on an icebreaker, I think. I don't know if that's what they called it or not. I can't remember. But that we got together, and Jerry was able to be best man for Bernie and Clinette's wedding.
Well, that's a pretty... I happen to have been with Bernie at the reunion of... Bernie was in the Coast Guard cutter Storrs, and he was part of the expedition that made the first circumnavigation of the North American continent.
Yes.
And we had a big gathering just a year ago, and that's where I first met Bernie, and I've kept in touch with him, and he is the one who told me about you. And also, so when you were out at the light, it is about 5 miles, isn't it, from one end of the spit to the other, out to the lighthouse?
Yep, I think that was it, just about 5 miles.
So when you needed to go for, let's say, to go shopping,
mm-hmm.
What were the logistics of that in those days? What did you do? How did you do that?
Well, we had our little tide book, and if we took the vehicle, we had to go when the tide was out and make sure we come back when the tide was out. Otherwise, if you couldn't do that, we'd had a little boat. I think it was an old Chris Craft, and we could take the boat.
And when you took the boat, where did you go?
Well, we went to shore right close there. There was a motel there, and I think that was owned by Ben Frick. He was the octopus fisherman. Years later, he was on What's My Line, and he would kind of watch our cars. We had our cars sitting along there, and he'd kind of take care of things for us. And if push come to shove, he'd even take a boatload out to the end of the spit.
So when you finished your tour at New Dungeness, and were you the only Coast Guard people out there? Was there another family there?
There was always three families. When we got there, it was Gene Ostland and his wife Joan, and Walter Cummins and his wife Joe, and us. And then when Gene moved out, Walter Cummins moved into the big house, and we had another young couple by the name of Hank and Sharon Borski that moved in. So there was always three Coast Guardsmen and their wives.
That was a pretty tight living out there.
It was, but I'll tell you what. We got to be good cooks. It was kind of a contest.
And
who could make the best dessert?
And I am certain that one of the things that helps in that kind of tight living is that Coast Guard people, when they go to sea, they live in very tight quarters. They're accustomed to that. And it is always remarkable to me how adaptable the wives and the families become when they are in the situations like you describe. So were there any, I'm not going to ask if there were any downsides, because people always managed to work their way through. Who was the officer in charge when you were there?
Gene Osland.
And
then when he left, it was Walter Cummins.
So when Jerry finished his tour, he was transferred to Wachusett. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, he went first. They sent him to Great Lakes Naval Training Center.
And that was for what training?
Machinist mate.
For a machinist mate. All right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So for those. Of Captain Joe's people who are not familiar with the ratings, the machinist mate was a petty officer who worked on and repaired machinery in the engineering spaces, mm-hmm. and that's what Jerry Fuchs did. And yep. So he went to school. He went to A school with the Navy at Great Lakes, mm-hmm. and then he went to the Coast Guard cutter Wachusett. And Wachusett was a steam-powered ship, and machinist mates were assigned to steam-powered ships. How did you handle the deployments that those ships made?
Fine. We had bought a motorhome, not a motorhome, a trailer house, basically. And we were located in Seattle, and I got a job. And a secretarial job, and we did fine.
So where in the Seattle area did you park this trailer?
At 125th and Aurora.
Oh, my goodness. For Captain Joe's people who are not Pacific Northwest people, Aurora is one of the great arterials. And among other, you go out Aurora to go to the Woodland Park Zoo, and you keep on going. 125th is way out there, Dee.
Could be. Yeah, I know I had to travel a ways to get to work in the morning.
So where did you end up working?
I worked for Murray B. Marsh, which was a carpet and flooring wholesaler, I think. I think we were pretty much wholesale.
So when Jerry came to the end of his enlistment, he decided not to stay in the Coast Guard. Is that true, is it not?
That is true, yes.
And so what did he decide to do after that?
Well, he was responsible for his dad building a roller skating rink in Billings, Montana, before he went into the service. And when he got out, he thought that's what he'd like to do, and we had the opportunity to go to Minot, North Dakota, and we built a rink, and we operated that for 43 years.
And the skills that he earned as a machinist mate in the Coast Guard certainly had to have stood him in good stead as he operated the machinery connected with keeping a skating rink going, even in the cold of Minot, North Dakota.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So you are a delightful lady, and I am so appreciative of your coming on with me. And so I'm going to ask for your commentary on one of my regular features, and that is that every so often, I open up a magazine, and the one that I've opened up this time is called The Week. It is a magazine that's published, obviously, every week in London, and it always has a section in it about property, and I'm always looking for property. Not that I'm ever going to buy any, because I am not ever going to buy any property other than here on the magical Isle of Vashon. I'm living here for the rest of my life, But I always look, and in particular do I always look in the United Kingdom, because that is one of my second or third homes. And the property this week is, of all places, D, a lighthouse. And it is, so I'm going to offer you and me the opportunity that we go into this together. Here's the description of it. It is in the county of Ayrshire, the Isle of Arran, a rare opportunity to buy an island with the former lighthouse keeper's accommodation. 5 bedrooms, a family bath. That means there's only one bath in this property. A kitchen, 2 reception rooms, a self-contained cottage, which includes 1 bed, 1 shower room, a kitchen. Outbuildings, garden, stone jetty, helipad. Speaking of helipads, how did the, when the helicopter came in to evacuate you and your son, how did they set it down? Were they able to land right close to the lighthouse out there at New Dungeness?
Yes, they were. I don't remember having to walk very far. We had a pretty big lawn area between the big house and the duplex, like that is the light, where the light was. And I don't remember if they landed right there, but they landed very close.
So I'm looking at the photograph of this property that you and I are going to go to in on together.
Yes.
And it looks very much like New Dungeness, as a matter of fact. It is very remote. It's on a little piece of land. It is looks to me like at low tide you could walk, and it looks to me like it's about 5 miles. So here's the price. Here's I don't know how much you've saved up, how much you've got in your discretionary funding, but the price is £350 sterling, which is about 400. Rate of exchange now, it's about $420,000 U.S. You got your half?
I don't think so.
All right, well.
At my age, I don't think I'm even going to be over there and try it out.
Well, I don't know. I reject that at my age business. You sound to me like, first of all, you are active and that you are... always about the things that you want to do in life. And so I am going to thank you for being with me, and thank you for the call out for Bernie and his anniversary, because it was through him that we were able to make this contact. And I've got just a couple of other things that I am going to get to in the very few minutes that I have left. And so here we go.
Okay.
The book today is I may have talked about this one before, but I bring it up again. It is called The Riddle of the Compass, and it is written by Amir D. Akzel, who is the author of the very popular book called Fermat's Last Theorem. And although it is written not by a sailor, it's written not by an engineer, but written by, I think, a mathematician. But it is a very, very interesting book. And because we have become so fixated on electronics and automation, especially aboard ship and in aircraft, I like to bring us back to some fundamentals. And the magnetic compass is one of those. Jerry would not have worked on the compass end of the ship. He would have worked on the other end of the ship. But his service was part of that which meant that the station, New Dungeness Light, and the ship to which he was assigned, the Coast Guard cutter Wachusett, a sister to my first ship out of the academy, the Winnebago, mm-hmm. All of that, everybody in ship's company, whether they are newly assigned to the engine room and their first job is to clean strainers, or if they are the captain, each one of them has a vital part to play. And I take this opportunity to recognize the hands who serve, even though they don't get, maybe they are not seen on the bridge, they are not seen on the quarterdeck, and in some cases, if they are really dirty and messy after having pulled a watch down in the engine room of a steam-powered ship like Jerry did, they may not even be welcomed too much on the clean decks that are maintained by the bosun's mates. But the fact remains that the only way that this ship is going to operate is that everybody pulls together. And so I honor Jerry's service, and in particular do I honor yours, Dee, because it is the people, the women, and now, because we have women serving aboard ship, and sometimes it is their husbands who are the ones who are standing and waiting for their sailor to return from the sea. Mm-hmm. The ones who are there waiting for their men or their women to return safely. And that's the captain's job, is to make sure that everybody who goes out comes back home safe, the ship is safe, the crew is safe. And that was my part of the work. But I could not do those things without the Jerry Fuchs and the Bernie Merrifields and all of the other people who are part of a ship's company. And I could not have done it without the wives and now the husbands who remain behind and take care of the home while the ship is at sea. So my thanks and my gratitude to you and for all of the ones that you represent by being on the program with me today. So I've got a couple of quick things that I want to get out here, and one of them is I'm headed here from here over to the mainland on our prairie system, and I have to report that they have already reported that they are at least half an hour behind schedule, and we're not even halfway into the day. So I really look forward to assuming command of the ferry system. So far, that offer has not yet come to me. Well, you're laughing, Dee, but I don't know. Down where you are in the warm climates where you don't have to depend on the ferries, but you lived in Seattle. You know how the ferries work here.
I certainly do. I had to take two to go to town and two to come home when we are in the lighthouse.
Oh, so there you have it. See, you know exactly how it works. So
I do.
Then you can understand my disdain for the fact that they still cannot seem to get themselves organized. And every single day, we get this ferry alert that says the ferries are running half an hour, 20 minutes, and that's where we are today. The other thing I want to mention is that we continue to be very busy in the Caribbean, in particular in the repatriation of Cubans, Haitians, and citizens of the Dominican Republic. And to me, this seems to be increasing. I don't any longer have access to the statistics, so I don't know if that's the case. But this seems to me to be an ever-increasing mission. So this is your Captain Joe. I've come to the end of my time. Dee, thank you so much, dear, for being with me. And
as always,
I am asking that each of you, it is my wish, my hope, my command, that each of you take care of the people for whom you are responsible, and that you watch their six. And this is your Captain Joe, as always, up in the captain's chair, on station, and watching properly. We will meet again right here next week. Take care.
The day will come, things will fall apart. The rust.